If Maria supported the show, I'd be less sick of podcasts.
The Blah Blah Blah.
Sending out good vibes.
Good vibes. Underneath breaths of deep gratitude and prayers for guidance and protection. And put on a didgeridoo and shamanic drumming track. Shivers or vibrations and stuff like that.
Okay, guys, welcome back to the Grind America Show. Coming at you this week with the past guest coming back. Bernie Taylor's back to talk about maps in Antarctica. I mean, we get into some crazy granite talk at the end too, but I mean, the Antarctica stuff is great. There was a nice chronology of the maps and the history of Antarctica. I think I might have screwed up which team died at the South Pole expedition, and people have been really chewing that apart. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm not a fucking Antarctica expert, motherfuckers. I don't know what to tell you. But anyway, it's a great chat. Bernie does a great job of going through those maps, and it's fun.
Is that on our YouTube then? So if people want to see the visuals of the maps and stuff, because I mean, of course we can, it'll be good on audio too, but yeah, it's on our YouTube.
It's on the YouTube. If people want to go check that out, if they want to like and subscribe to YouTube, that'd be great too. That'd help us out.
Yeah, it's still going. Like, it's actually like, we might be out of strike in, what's that zone?
8 days until the warning. 8 days. April 9th.
I mean, we might even be able to monetize that shit now.
It's a possibility, yeah. It might
not that we, you know, I mean, I know we didn't want to at one point, but now that you're doing this full time and I'm doing it full time for the most part. We got to get everything we can here.
We used to get super chats too.
Oh, that's right. So that was one of the main reasons, because then you could tip through YouTube.
We could tip while we were live and stuff like that. It was a few $100 a month in super chats.
Yeah, we were getting all excited. Then boom, strike, and then they're like, "We don't like your channel at all." Now all of a sudden they answered an appeal and said that, yes, your appeal it'll win. We won an appeal, which was unheard of until then. And now our channel might be back in the running. So do you have to ask them for a review or something like that? Or?
I can ask for a new review in May sometime.
Cause weren't you showing me like with these shorts now too, that our engagement's getting, it's growing again finally. Cause it's been like fucking plateaued for eight years
of plateau, and then it started growing again out of nowhere. So we'll see what happens. I mean, obviously we don't rely on YouTube in any way, but it's there, and it's, so if it can grow and find new people, and who knows, even makes it
more. That's why we did it at first, is for the discoverability, for the SEO and all that too, right? Because when people search the show, it gets there on YouTube, and
we have a lot of stuff that's searchable, so
yeah,
people should search it and it'd be great. And then they can check it out, like and subscribe. And then we got the Adult Brain Audiobooks YouTube channel people can subscribe to. And our new one, if you're Canadian, the A-List.
I mean, I guess
probably don't subscribe to it because it'll just screw up the algo.
No. What?
But they say don't get people that aren't going to watch your content subscribing to your channel. Because it's going to start putting your content in front of their people.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's not even worth it.
When you start a new channel, don't tell your friends and all your buddies about it. Because if your first like 30 subscribers are your family that are going to watch your one video and then never watch it again, and none of their like co-minglers are going to be into it either, because it's going to start showing the stuff they're interested in. So
no way.
It just is a bad start to a channel. I mean, we're far enough along on all our stuff that it doesn't really affect it, but that's what they say in the beginning.
But that's interesting, because it's not even worth the sub then. It's like, don't sub if you're not going to watch it. It's probably doesn't help it.
I'm pretty picky with my subs, honestly. I'll watch a channel 50 times and I haven't even subscribed to it yet. So yeah, I don't know. Still feeling you out, buddy. Not committing.
And you know what? I don't even find that much of a difference, to be honest with you, in my YouTube algo, whether I've subbed or not, you know, whether I see them or not.
Well, it makes it easy to just click on that subscription tab.
Yeah, sure. For finding it later if you want. Yeah, totally.
because you can go into a tab that'll just give you a display of your of your subscription stuff. So I mean, I still use YouTube all the time. It's like,
yeah, me too. I mean, maybe I should mention too on Adult Brain. I mean, I am doing a live experimental narration like every morning, pretty much every morning. I mean, I didn't do today and yesterday because I couldn't, but I did the weekend and every morning at 9 a.m. my time. So that would be 11 Eastern, Ragnarok, The Age of Fire and Gravel, one of Randall's favorite books. And it's got some visuals in there and I'm just reading it live just to see how that goes. Just doing like a chapter at a time type thing. So join in, come and see me, say hi.
Join in, come say hi.
It's... Like and subscribe. I mean, I probably won't communicate with you because I'm a little awkward just trying to read and it's super raw doing the editing right there and everything. So
you can see how the audiobook sausage is made over there.
Yes, exactly. That's a good book, man. That is a good book. I mean, I'm telling you, Randall, this is super underrated, that whole book. It's talking about the cataclysms and the evidence for it and all the mythological stuff. And oh my God, that one and the Atlantis one, but that one specifically talking about the drift, what they call, where they found all this, all the gravel and rocks all over half the world covered in it, you know, that they think was from this cataclysm. And then, so I'm right at the end of the chapter where all the legends are, you know, the legends of the darkness and how many cultures have these mythologies of darkness and the resurrection of the sun and destruction by fire and ice. I mean, it's unbelievable. All over the world.
All over the world. I mean, yeah, we're doing some other stuff on the YouTube channel about what might have caused that too. If people want to go check that out, I've got to start as soon as I've done this book I'm working on, The Secret Teachings of All Ages, Volume 2, which people will be able to look for soon. It's been a hell of a lot of work, but it's almost done and I'm going to get it out there. And then I'm going to get going on a new episode of, The Earth Unhinged, which is kind of just going through the Ethical Skeptic's paper and, putting it to video and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so
yeah, that'd be good. And what else? Wasn't there another book that you should talk about that's out there now that you've another compilation?
Oh, there's a few compilations out there. Yeah, we've got, off the top of my head, there's definitely the two I can think of off the top of my head are Before the Flood, which is a ancient knowledge, forbidden knowledge of the gods, which is a compilation of the Book of Enoch, the Epic of Gilgamesh, and the Emerald Tablets. And then there's also Mystic Christianity, the Inner Path to Christ and Revelation, which is The Mystical Life of Jesus, God-Man, and
so Steiner one about Christ, Mystical Christianity or whatever.
The Steiner one, correct.
And then there's the H.G. Wells one too, right?
Right, that's the other one, the Essential H.G. Wells Manifestos for a New World Order, which is a compilation of four of his books.
Oh, awesome. So that would have been like World Brain, the New World Order, and the Open Conspiracy, probably. And
the Open Conspiracy, I think there's two Open Conspiracies, maybe.
Yeah,
there's four of them in there anyway. And it's a good, nice cover. I think it's gonna be a good book. So I expect the Secret Teachings of All Ages 2 will be quite a banger because that was not just a compilation, it's from the magazines, it's got some other stuff in there. It's been a bit of a project. So speaking of projects, it looks like we're projecting to both go to Cosmic Summit.
Yeah. 2025 on June 20th to the 23rd. This is going to be a good one. Some of the same people from last year, like Randall and Ben and Bob Greenier is going to be there, and Praveen and Micah Hanks and more. This is quite a list. So yeah, I'm looking forward to going with you this time. Have somebody else to hang out with, but we got lots of friends that are going there too. So I mean, if you're in the area, because isn't Greensboro pretty close to, like, back east there?
It's all right there.
Come and see us for a weekend. Even for there might be day passes and stuff too. I'm not too sure, but
there's one that's kind of cheap. The cheapest one, the bottom.
Use Grimerica 25 for 10% off, and then we get a little tiny little bump from that as well, which helps our costs. Yeah, we're going to hang out, party, and see some lectures. And I'm going to be on a panel on the Monday, the classroom section on a debate on Atlantis, which will be fantastic. Looking forward to that.
I figure if we're doing conferences and events, I should probably get down there and meet some people and see how that thing's running and meet some other people that we can do tours with and all that kind of stuff. You know, it makes a lot of good sense. You know, so it'll be my one trip to the East this year. It's so annoying to go. East, but yeah, so two trips. I'm getting excited because now that I don't get out much, I really don't get out much. I get out on the farm.
You don't? Oh my god, more than I do.
Yeah, I get the kids to school. I take the kids to school in the morning and pick them up on my week, and then tomorrow I'm going goose hunting. So the geese have finally arrived for spring goose hunting.
Yeah, I feel like they just left, but yet it's been a long winter too.
Goes back quick, which is good. That's what you want. So I'll be goose hunting in the morning for snow geese. I got to pull all my stuff out this afternoon. So I'm excited about that. I mean, this is kind of, I've really just been in this room fucking 15 hours a day almost since for a month. It's been a month now, a month today. So our basically, yeah, there'll be the third. It was the 3rd of March was the day it happened. At the end of the day, like the pricks couldn't do it in the morning. Come on. You make it work all day, and then surprise, motherfucker, we're fucking close. And I'm still fucking trying to figure out if my severance with those guys. So this is taking longer than I thought. But I mean, they paid me right up until middle of May. So until then, I'm not too worried about it. We got a good thing going here between the books and everything else. We do need some more good things going here. This is the thing is like, If I have to go work again, then everything comes crashing down from the podcast side of things, because as you know, that the podcast grew with the work and the freedom that had come with my job and that kind of stuff. If I got to go like on the pavement again and get to work, and I mean, something's got to give. Hopefully it's not this, but hopefully it doesn't come to that. Don't think it will. We got the audiobooks, we got everything else, and we got some people to thank for coming around and supporting the show. And we hope some more people do that, become nobles here in Grimerica. It's super important to us, and it's what keeps us going. And we gave you guys an extra show last week. This is what we're hoping to do, is do an extra couple shows a month with the newfound freedom. We're doing some interviews during the day. And, you know, so the plan is we're going to give you guys yet even more value on top of the 700 episodes we've given you all for free. We're going to just chunk out some extra ones. We just did an extra one last week, right? The DMT one came out Thursday. Bonus app. Let us know how you like that. So we'll give you guys a couple extra episodes a month, and hope that we can get you guys to double the support around here. That's what we're hoping. And that's only like 150 or 200 people. So if we get like 100 more people sign up, we'd be close to doubling it already. And then, you know, we go from there and do great things. More things like go to the Cosmic Summit, meet people, maybe do some interviews while we're there. You know, if we can pull it off, there could be some guests there. This is my thought, is there's some guests there that we've been having trouble tracking down, that if we were just like, hey man, we got a microphone right in the room right now, we could just go up there for half an hour and do a quick take. I don't know, what do you think? Is that sort of stuff doable? I mean, probably, it's right?
Yeah, we can get a little separate interview room set aside too. We just need the equipment and all that to be there.
Roadcasters make it a lot easier. I think I could run it all off one Roadcaster.
Yeah.
So I'm going to plan to bring my
laptop. Into your laptop?
It's my laptop. Yeah.
Yeah, but there's definitely people to interview there. I mean, some of the other guys were doing that. I didn't do it last time. But yeah.
It's hard when you're solo. I mean, no one wants to do that when you're solo. And you got the big pressure. I'm going to film your thing, of course, too. You got your big presentation cherry getting popped.
It's not a presentation. It's just, I'm on a panel. Yeah, it's just a panel.
It's close enough. It's close enough. It's like a good entry level. It's like a little foreplay for doing your presentation. Yeah. And the other thing, I mean, we got all these conferences. We go out and try to do interviews. If we have more supporters, we could afford to do it. So that's the other stuff we could look at getting into if we could ramp up the budget for the show. We do have some people to thank, though, starting with Francis Popovici, I think is how you said that. NB's New Brunswick. So I thought it might have been, I shouldn't be doxing people, but I thought it might have been a new UK posse here. But he comes in at $5.55 a month. We really appreciate that. We couldn't do it without you. And big shout out to Tyler Anderson, who signed up on the Patreon for $22.80 a month.
Nice. Wow.
Huge. Yeah, that's we really appreciate that. And then we go over to Casey Opog, who I gotta see if I can change the button. I'm assuming none of these are A-list, but anyway, he signs in at $5.55 a month. I mean, this person's from the States, so there's no way that they're. And then I thought there was one more, maybe not, but I do want to give a thanks to, you know who it was? It was a buddy that just came in today, Jim Davis. Our buddy Davis came in with $10.80. So big thanks. We love you guys. We couldn't do it without you. You guys literally keep the show on the air. You really do.
Yeah, thanks. And keep the ads out of it too, right? We want to ask you. Keep listening to ads.
They're bothering us to put ads in right now. I mean, they literally email us once every couple months saying they will just automatically put an ad in every 10 minutes and give us thousands of dollars a month, which is more than we're making right now. But it's just, it's an ethical stop for us. We don't want to do it. But we don't want to feel too stupid for not doing it either. So, America.ca/support if you can, when you can, sign up. Versus all the other stuff you can do too, right? You can just share this shit. Just sharing it is huge. Telling people about it. The audiobooks, if you have Audible credits, adultbrain.ca. If you just search Adult Brain Publishing and Audible, a bunch of books will come up. You can go through and search. There's like 145 in there right now. You could use those credits up for, if they're just collecting dirt, you can send them up our way and we get like $2, $3. So that's something you can do. You can also just go watch the YouTube channel. Maybe while you sleep, just throw on the Adult Brain YouTube channel and listen to audiobooks while you sleep. If you don't want to listen to Graham's bullshit, just turn the volume down and just let it play. And we get a couple of cents, you know, for every time someone plays one over there. It's not a lot, but it's something. There's all these little ways you can support the show that literally don't cost you nothing. I mean, all you guys have unlimited internet at home. Just be streaming Adult Brain. And, you know, another thing you do, come on a trip, contact@thecabin.com. We got a great one coming with Randall next month. We got another person backed out of Atlantis. So we've got two spots open for Atlantis, which we're not going to really start pushing until after this May trip's out of the way. There is still a half dozen spots left for that. So if you guys want to come along on that, it's going to be a great time. There's still a better than 50-50 chance that Danity Dunker is going to be along on that trip. So I'm not saying he's going to be there yet, but it's 50-50 as of right now. So that's something else not to consider if you want to come down and do that. And of course, did you get any emails about Easter Island? Was anyone into it?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't.
But he's into it. I think honestly, there's enough people just in the CAC mailing list that will jump on that. I did get a lot of, when I put it in the chats, in the past CAC events chats, I had like 6 or 7 people say that they would want to get in on that. So I think I'm waiting to get in contact and chat more about it with Cliff, but it looks like that'll be coming up too. So it's a good reason to sign up for that contact@thecabin email. Because that's the only way to get that shit. So, anything else?
I don't think so.
Nothing. I mean, I'm going to go hunting tomorrow. Maybe try and videotape some of it. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah. I was wondering about that. Yeah, you might as well try and have it like a, you know, body cam or something, you know?
Yeah. Did we ever get the GoPro back? I don't think so, huh?
I don't know. I don't think so.
But I do have a couple cameras around here. I'm going to try and get some footage and just see how it goes. When I figure out what I'm doing with it, I'll let people know.
Yep.
I think that's it then. Do you have a bio for Bernie?
Yeah. Bernie's from beforeorion.com is his website. Naturalist, archaeo, astronomer, and author of Before Orion, Finding the Face of the Hero and Biological Time. Welcome to the Before Orion portal with Bernie Taylor. On these pages, you will find images, videos, and interviews exploring Bernie Taylor's Before Orion, Finding the Face of the Hero, and Biological Time hypothesis. Peer through the combined lenses of archaeology, anthropology, astronomy, depth psychology, and mythology to rediscover some of mankind's greatest secrets. Share this material on social media through the icons of the button below, da da da, social media links. And yeah, he's got a link to Academia and ResearchGate right there as well. So there you have it.
There you have it, guys. There you have it. And like you said, please support the show. Most of all, enjoy the chat with one and only Bernie Taylor.
With Bernie Taylor. Welcome back to Grimerica. We're just trying to figure out when you were last here, but it's been a while.
We were here about a year and a half ago over the Durham University Cambridge Journal issue.
Oh, that's right.
That which was fun, yeah. Worked out in spades for me.
Oh, that's good.
Are we live right now?
Yeah, we're live.
Awesome. Yeah. So the Cambridge Journal editor was forced to write to have other authors submit a comparison between the Durham one and mine.
Right.
It didn't look very good for the Durham University people.
And what was the topic about again?
It was about the lunar timekeeping in Ice Age art, which I said that indigenous peoples have around the world, including the in Canada. And they said that they invented the whole thing, discovered it by themselves. I said, BS. And so they ultimately cited my paper 21 times in the comparison. That's like writing on a blackboard. I will not plagiarize other people's work 21 times. So that was a win for the independence of this world who just, you know, want to just do their jobs.
Yeah.
But today we're going to do some really cool stuff, really, really cool stuff. And you're going to tell me, one of you is going to give a thumbs up when we actually walk into it.
Okay. There's always a lot of pressure doing podcasts with you, Bernie, because you involve us and you question us too along the way.
And there's sound effects from Darren down the road. We practice.
So this, I got to say that it was episode 341, which was in April of 2019, which have been, you know, like a few months before my divorce. And then 598, which was May of 2023. So
May of
2023. Almost 2 years ago. Yeah. So 6 years ago and 2 years ago, respectively.
We need to hang out more often. There wouldn't be so much dispute between the US and Canada.
That's right. I mean, maybe we could solve this. I mean, I don't think people are not happy with our view on it all right now. So especially, you know, people have been are accusing us of being Americans. I mean, I'm an Indian, so I don't know how much more Canadian I can get than that. But you know, we both tend to be more American at heart, and we do spend more time down there. And I've got more friends from down there. It's just this weird thing that sort of happened as a Canadian.
Well, not only that, but we shouldn't get too political. But I mean, we're not doing too good up in Canada, really. I mean, they're kind of destroying us in almost every metric that's possible. We're down. So it's not like we're thriving and prosperous. And then it would be a different story for me, but I feel like we're broken to the point where we're beyond repair. So, I mean, we don't have to get into all that. Let's talk about Antarctica or some like crazy mysteries.
Yeah. The biggest question out there in the alternative space. And I believe that the three heads combined can come up with a logical answer that does not involve seeds or shipwrecks, because this is about maps. So let's pull up the big screen. Let's look up the first image.
Okay.
Okay. So in this presentation, we're going to walk through maps because I believe this is a story of the historicity of maps. And the map that people keep bringing up, Graham Hancock, for example, and this is not a slam or debunking of Graham Hancock. It's not a promotion of the other side. And this is just three guys getting together, you know, looking at the picture. So the map everybody brings up is the Herontius Phineus map of 1531. And to the viewer's left, to the viewer's right, you can see Antarctica. And just below Antarctica, you can see South America. The bottom tip, can almost connected to Antarctica. And then just to the left of Antarctica, you can see the bottom of South Africa.
Okay.
Now, Hancock, and we're going to call Hancock, can't call him Graham because we're going to get this whole thing mixed up. And so we don't want to have Graham the greater or Graham the lesser. Just we're going to call him Hancock. So Hancock was on Rogan. And with his shirt stuff keeps getting older or something like that. And yeah. He has that same map. And he says, Hancock says, what the bleep is Antarctica doing on a map drawn in the 1500s, which we know was based on older source maps when nobody knew it existed in the 1500s? Interesting question. I believe that Graham Hancock is asking an honest question. I don't believe he knows the answer to that question. Okay.
Especially in such detail, you know what I mean? It's not just like a blob on the map that's like, yeah, you know, there's this thing some people saw down there sometime. It's like a pretty detailed map of the coastline, right? And without ice in some cases.
Well, that's the question. And so to Hancock, the obvious answer, quote, we are dealing with the fingerprints of a lost civilization that mapped the world, and then ... He goes on. Okay. So as I said, this is not a debunking Graham Hancock and his people. This is about let's look into that map. Where does that map actually come from? Okay. Well, the origin of this Antarctica story goes to The Alchemist and the Geography by Claudius Ptolemy. Claudius Ptolemy is the one who brought all the Greek constellations together into a package that we see today, that we recognize. And his book, The Geography, is not read very often. Okay, it was in Latin for many years, and sometime back in the last century, it was translated to English. And it was a theory that's important. End maps of the Greek and Roman world, what they knew at the time. And this is one of the maps. It's colorized from the geography, and people have seen this sort of thing. You can see the Mediterranean. You can see the Mediterranean to the top left, and you can see the India down to the
Indian right Ocean there. Down there. Yeah,
you can see. Yeah. So this is not. This was the Greco-Roman world. This is where they conquered. This is where they traded. This is where they did their deeds. Okay. No secret about this map. Okay.
Yeah, but whoa. Yep. Can you back up?
Oh, we'll go back. Yeah.
But look at all the way along the bottom, I think, is the key part of this map, right? Is all the way along the bottom. Because what I've got in front of me, just to show you, like, because I wanted to kind of pick your brain about this. This is like, this is Google Maps. I was just playing around. I always like to go on Google Maps and look at the size of Antarctica on here. And this Absolutely. Is kind of where. This is kind of where you were showing us this area here, right?
Yeah.
In the middle, it's got like Mediterranean and down here, like the Indian Ocean. And then look at this. Look at Antarctica. It goes all the way. Look at the size of Australia compared to Antarctica here. I mean, how is that? Like, so Google Maps doesn't even do like a really good job.
You know what I always notice on these maps that no one ever brings up is it really seems like everything is washed out west to east.
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to go to the next slide.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, we're going to go to the next slide. All the horizontal lines, Darren. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like if you look at all the coasts and all the points and all the peninsulas, they've all moved to the east, which is the way the earth is opposite of the way the earth is spinning. No.
So like pole shift wise or something, right, Darren. So look at the back.
Yeah, well, that's what my thought would happen in a pole shift is you'd have just a giant sort of displacement of
that. But look at the bottom.
Next slide. You guys are jumping ahead. You're 20 slides ahead. You're too weird. Okay, so Claudius Ptolemy in his geography, he gave us the earliest known writing of the word Antarctica. That's where it comes from. Okay, so 150 CE, Claudius Ptolemy believed that it was in Antarctica. So now you guys get interested, right?
Circulus Antarcticus. I love it.
Exactly.
Circulus.
And so to the north is the Arctic Circle, and the bottom is the Antarctic Circle. Okay? So most people, very few people have actually seen this image before, because it's in the theory section of the geography, and most people actually haven't even read the geography, because it's kind of one of those obscure books. But this is a theory, though. Okay. And the theory was, the Greek theory was that the world is a sphere. And Eratosthenes measured the sphere or came up with an estimate of it based on distances from point A to point B in shadows. And okay. So this is where we get to the depth of it. This was a theory. And the Greeks believed that there was, if you went north, it was really cold, and you went too far south, it was really warm. And as we looked at the map of Claudius Ptolemy earlier, they really don't give anything descriptive going south, just as Darren noticed. Okay. And they believed that the northern hemisphere, which they knew about, needed to be counterbalanced in the southern hemisphere. So Antarctica, according to the Greeks, was a counterbalancing of the northern hemisphere. They didn't know it was there. Purely a theory, which is written up in the opening chapter of Claudius Ptolemy's Geography. Now, it's a very important concept is that because they hadn't gone, the ancient Greeks hadn't gone south of the equator, all they knew was that it got warmer and warmer and water, which is completely reasonable. Okay, and they had got people in their space that they encountered had gone further north, and they knew it was really cold and it was uninhabitable in either direction. So a very important concept is that they believe that it was completely dry, uninhabitable. Okay, the word Antarctica, where does it actually, the origin of the actual word is a word that everybody on this podcast has heard before. It ties into the word for Ursa Major, and it's Arctos. Is the Greek word for bear. And it literally means if you're looking towards the Arctic, you are looking to the northern sky towards Ursa Major. And if you're looking south, you are looking away from Ursa Major in the night sky, and that would be Antarctica. That is the origin of the word Antarctica. Completely theory, based on a bear. That's important, bears. Okay. So if you look at a map, actually look at images online, you Google penguins. The penguins are going to be on Antarctica, and north of there, north on the continents, or Antarctica, sorry, South Africa. But when you go north, you won't too far north. You won't find bears. I'm sorry, you won't find penguins. You'll find bears. So where bears exist, for the most part, where bears exist, penguins don't. So that's how you can see images. So if you see someone AI an image and they say it's the Arctic and it has a penguin on it, It's not the real deal. So Antarctica is looking away from the bears in the night sky. Ptolemy didn't know that there were no bears on actually Antarctica. It just kind of works out that way. Okay. So to understand, so my perspective on this is a question of geography. I say it's not a question of seeds floating in the air. It's not a question of counts of ships or shipwrecks and all that sort of stuff. And when we start to look at history of geography from our perspective, in the Western Hemisphere, it's Columbus. Columbus sails the ocean blue in 1492, all that sort of stuff. Came out of Genoa. And you can go to Genoa today. He sells King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella on financing the deal. He has five voyages, I think that is, okay, between 1492. And 1492 is the original one, and everybody knows that one. And that is becomes Columbus Day when he first sights land. And of course, the Native American, I assume the First Nation people in Canada perspective, is that Columbus didn't discover anything. We were here. Is that right, Darren?
Pretty much.
That's right. I'm with you on this. Now, I grew up on the East Coast. And on the East Coast, there's a lot of Catholic churches, and the Catholic churches are the Knights of Columbus, which is a fraternity that does the pancake breakfasts and the bingo. And they go down, the news people, every Columbus Day, go down to the Knights of Columbus Hall and pull out an Italian guy and ask him what he feels about it, this issue. And they say, well, it's discrimination against Italians, and you can imagine. Okay. So the fourth, the last voyage of Christopher Columbus is actually the most important from our perspective, is that he hits Venezuela. So he has touched ground on South America, and that sets in motion maps that take us from South America south. And that's kind of important. His fourth voyage. He, by the way, he sets ground in Venezuela, but he still thinks he's in Asia. This is okay. And Columbus had maps. There were many maps at his time.
What do you mean he still thinks he's in Asia? Because he came.
He actually, Columbus, his goal.
He came
was
west.
To reach.
Yeah, but he wanted to circumnavigate the Earth. I think, right? He thought he could
exactly.
get to Asia.
And so go back. Actually, we're going to go forward a map, and you can see a map that one of the maps Columbus had, one of the resources, and his resource map is laid over a map of the current time. So he's sailing to, he believes, as I point to Asia with the red, is
he thought he was going to go under Mexico. North America.
He didn't know North America was there.
No,
he didn't
did
know North America was there.
Didn't he know?
He actually, until his death, he believed he had landed in Asia.
Okay.
So we're putting together the world perspective. Columbus had a map that he developed with a colleague of his. And it's bogus. Now, the next big discoverer in this narrative, which is very important, is Vasco da Gama. And you guys must have wrote a book report like the middle school or high school about Vasco da Gama, right? The Portuguese. Vasco da Gama sails around the southern tip of Africa, which is Cape Horn. Very important. So what we've now learned in this is that there's a space between the southern part of Africa and the theoretical Antarctica. Okay, so they just determine this. They don't know how wide the space is, but the space is there. Vasco da Gama also on his travels, he goes to what would be like Panama, and he walks across and he sees that there is a Pacific on the other side, there's an ocean on the other side of the isthmus. Next guy, and we're expanding our geographical horizons, is Cabral. Cabral sails out of Portugal, and he lands. He's going to swing around under South Africa, but he hits Brazil. So what we're doing is we've gone from Columbus, Vasco da Gama, and Cabral, that we're moving south of what is known about South America. Okay, and kind of throw in here for you Canadians, you know, keep it fair. John Cabot sailed from Great Britain to Newfoundland and all those places up there that are very important in the history of humanity and all great innovations.
What about the Vikings? What about the Vikings and the Chinese?
So the Viking story is that, yes, the Vikings went to Greenland and possibly to Canada, but we don't have any maps. We don't have any maps. And so these guys didn't have any maps either. If we don't have them now, they didn't have them. Okay.
What about the Chinese?
Is a completely different story. That would be on the Pacific.
And that was before all this?
So I didn't do the Chinese. So this, okay. this presentation, so that is a question. That is not answered or seeks to be answered in this presentation.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. So then there's another map called the Cantino Planisphere, which was smuggled by Alberto Cantino to Italy. So it's a Portuguese map. He stole it. He went to like do some horse trading or something like that, and he steals the map. This information was a national treasure because it tells us. It told the Portuguese where their ports were, where their land they had discovered, because nobody else knew or nobody else had a map of where South America was. And you can see the New World. You can kind of see how far south the Portuguese had gone.
Did they show the Azores on that map there at all?
So the Azores. Oh, that yeah, Azores. They knew where the Azores were. Yeah, that's old news. That's old news. So the Cantino Planisphere was there, the Americas, as well as going around to India for spices. But we can see a map, you know, as it develops over time as people discover stuff. Amerigo Vespucci made multiple voyages to the America, and the word America comes from him, okay? Or it's named after him. So this is the map that people don't talk about. Okay, this is the Contarini Roselli map. I grew up with it. I grew up with third generation old world Italians, and it's like Aunt Contarini Roselli. Every dinner party was an operetta. It's old world Italian. Okay, now here we are. We see Antarctica. We see a theoretical Antarctica. Okay, and it's kind of nondescript. It's if you were to make a map, you know, you're just not going to grow a circle as Claudius Ptolemy did. You make it look like an island. Okay, but in this map we can see the separation between the southern part of Africa and the theoretical Antarctica. What we don't see is any space. As we said, we see space between Antarctica and South America because there was no knowledge of anything more south of South America at that time. So they're still off of like Brazil. They're just south of Brazil. They hadn't gone anywhere. They haven't gone anywhere further. So it's an evolution of maps as we have the exploration. And we can kind of look at this, kind of a zoom in on it. There's no mountains, there's no rivers. The guy makes a map. It looks pretty cool. But it's theoretical based on Claudius Ptolemy. And remember, Ptolemy said that going south, the further south you go, the hotter it gets, it becomes uninhabitable. Okay? So whether it's hot or it's cold, it becomes uninhabitable. But his concept was there was no cold down there. Okay. Okay. So another map comes along line, and it's 1507. And that's the Waldseemüller map, a German map, and this is a colorized version of it. And we don't see Antarctica, but we do see the space under South Africa, because that was a known. We also see what was known about South America, and you can see the Caribbean kind of in pink above it, or actually you can see it up there. So we have an evolution of maps where people were building on and learning from each other, and some of it was stolen. So you guys have heard about the Piri Reis map. I mean, it's been out there and everybody talks about it. And the Piri Reis map is, you can see the Caribbean, you can see South America, and you can see in the bottom what people say is Antarctica. It's non-descriptive and because it's not yet navigated. Okay. So there's no, people say, well, that's Antarctica. Well, I'm going to tell you it is. But we can lay over the Cantino planisphere over the Piri Reis map, and we can find they're identical. Okay, the Cantino planisphere came before the Piri Reis map, so the source map of the Piri Reis wasn't people tens of thousands of years ago; it was the Cantino planisphere. That's important. That's really important. So people say, "Well, the source map, it is Piri Reis said it is source map, and that's the Cantino planisphere from 11 years earlier, and everybody's good with that. Okay. So now we're going to look at the Piri Reis map compared to the Contarini Roselli map. And we see that we see a space under the Contarini Roselli map that between South Africa and Antarctica, but we don't see any connections between the Roselli map and between Antarctica and
South America.
South America, we don't see it. And so the Spaniards are. I'm sorry. The explorers are moving down the coast. They're moving down the coast of the western coast of South America, and they're adding territory to their maps. Okay. So it's a progression. Okay. The next big one. Really big one is Magellan. Magellan's ships circumnavigate the world, and he doesn't finish it. He dies along the way, but he travels through what is now has become the Strait of Magellan. He doesn't go around the southern tip of South America, which is the Cape Horn, whereas under the South Africa, it's the Cape of Good Hope. So he doesn't go under Cape Horn. Rather, he develops what is called the Strait of Magellan. He finds a route through there, which people continue to take over time. But what they don't know at this time, at the time of Magellan, is that this bottom part of South America doesn't connect to the theoretical Antarctica. They don't know that because nobody's gone there. So he dies in the Philippines, and his Basque navigator finishes the journey. Magellan's super important because it gives us global thinking. We're not just continents separated by time and space that you can travel around. And of course, there's the Magellan space probe.
You know what's crazy to me is all this is happening within a 20-year period, it seems, right? Or 20.
Oh, yeah. This is a very short period of time. Yeah.
So, like, this is like all these maps and all these explorers are happening from like now till it's like the same time from now till the 2000, you know, like from the millennial to now is like all these things have happened.
It's like a BlackBerry to an iPhone, whatever, 10 now or something, right?
Yeah. Same amount of time. Look at it.
And the BlackBerry came out of Canada, I believe. It did,
yeah.
It's a movie.
I mean, by the time the average person knew that, though, it was probably hundreds of years later.
Yeah. So anyway, so the Francisco de Hoces, a Spaniard, is attempting to go through the Strait of Magellan. He gets blown off course, and he goes south. And he says, well, there's something across there. But he turns around and goes to the Strait of Magellan, and he dies shortly afterwards. So we're starting to see some migration that people are going south. And they're seeing there's possibly something there. And we can go back to the Aurentius Finis map. And at this time, well, actually, let's go back to the Hoces was 1526. The Aurentius Finis map, which now comes on the scene, we see the Strait of Magellan as the narrow space between South America and Antarctica. They're not connected, but people believe that Antarctica at that time, there was something massive there to balance the Northern Hemisphere. It was kind of a thing. And on the Aurentius Finis map, it's ice free and it's too large. But that space is the Strait of Magellan. And again, it's this old theory based on Claudius Ptolemy. Okay. And so that's where Graham Hancock's map comes in. He has that map on the bottom of the screen with Joe Rogan asking the question, how could a map in the 1500s show Antarctica existed? The story continues. Okay. So just a few notes. The shapes of the Aurentius Finis map and the actual Antarctica are not the same. Okay, and we can see the difference in space between what is the southern Cape Horn at the bottom of South America and Antarctica versus the Strait of Magellan, because they didn't know it was there. But these shapes are not the same, and it's but it looks cool. I mean, someone made a map and kind of looks the same, but they're not connected. Okay, so and we have that separation under. We have the separation under between Antarctica and South Africa from the Vasco da Gama voyage. So let's compare these two, because that's really the question, right? Because the Rosalini map came first, 1506, versus the Finis map, 1531. Well, the history is that the Rosalini map depicts Claudius Ptolemy's theoretical Antarctica. Being separated from both Brazil and from South Africa, and they hadn't gone south from Brazil. Whereas the Finis map, over time, you see the almost connection between Antarctica and South America. So it's just a difference, and you can line up, and these are the same maps, right? I mean, you kind of looking up close, and it just turns slightly. Phineas turned it slightly because he gave us, a little different perspective. But it is the same Antarctica, except that Phineas has put mountains. Okay. And so the next map, and this goes to what Darren was talking about, these massive spaces for Antarctica. This is the 1570, is the Ortelius world map. And he calls it Terra Australis. But it's absolutely huge. It's massive because they're still working on this concept that it's got to be big to balance the Northern Hemisphere, because they know how they have a pretty darn good idea how big the Northern Hemisphere is, because they live there. And at this point, you could also see the Strait of Magellan as almost connecting to Antarctica, because that's where they were in their journey of discovery. Now, the Ortelius was really important, not because of the map I just showed you, but because he first put together the concept of continental drift, that all the continents were once connected. Okay. He you go back one, they fit, right? I mean, you guys were first grade, you saw a map and said, boy, that fits, right? You know, I've discovered it, right? And then your teacher said, no, someone else did. So he proposed that these are all connected and that fossils connect as well. So Dutch East India Company makes a journey around Cape Horn, which is the southern tip of South America, in 1616. And then we've established that there's a route, or there's actually a waterway between Antarctica and South America. He makes that first sailing. Important stuff. Okay. But we still don't really know where much about Antarctica. And then comes the British captain, James Cook. And at this time, Great Britain is connected. Canada is part of the empire. So give you guys a thumbs up on this one. Okay.
Even America would still be part of the empire.
We're going to get there. Well, that's so. He's looking for this missing continent that's theoretical that everybody thinks is there. Claudius Ptolemy called it Antarctica after the bears. It's also called Terra Magellanica, and the Phineas map we saw Terra Australis Ignita, the unknown land to the south. So it's a mystery. Everybody believes it's there because it has to be there to counterbalance the Northern Hemisphere. So he makes a number of voyages, and one of the voyages he travels around the world. He basically travels around the southern hemisphere of the world. He goes around Cape Horn. He goes to Tahiti, sees the girls, dancing girls, all that sort of stuff. He also goes around Australia, New Zealand, Australia, and he says that these are large land masses, but they're just not big enough to counterbalance the northern hemisphere. And so the question is still out there. He also his next voyage is that he circumnavigates Antarctica, and he crosses the Antarctic Circle, and he sees rocks and icebergs, and which equates, from his perspective, equates to land. So now we have an Antarctica. No one's actually gone to the pole, but we 1772, which goes back to what Hancock says, that it wasn't discovered until the 1700s or something, whatever his exact line is. He's right. It wasn't discovered at this time. Because it wasn't circumnavigated or crossed the Antarctic Circle. He doesn't land, but he says this is there. So back to the Darren's American history is the final voyage of Cook is he wants to search for a Northwest Passage. And at this time, we're at war with Great Britain. We Americans are at war with Great Britain. And Benjamin Franklin says, leave a ship alone, because the voyage of what he may discover is greater than knocking one more ship off the ocean, no matter who they are. So yes, this is part of history. It's really important. Okay, the first undisputed Antarctica landing, 1895. When we said first undisputed Antarctica landing, people had known it because Cook had circumnavigated. People had all kinds of stories, right? Okay, it's just how things are. And he had a steamship a Norwegian, and he landed and he touched ground and said, I've discovered Antarctica. Okay. And there's a book, he writes a book about it. The first to reach the South Pole is Roald Amundsen. And he's in a race with a British team. He gets there just a few days before the British team, and the British team were very fortunate to have a tent to sleep in for the night, and he offered them all his food that he no longer needed in case the British needed some food. So the Vikings make it first, the Vikings make it first, and they were very kind to the British. And so we give the Vikings credit on the actual discovery and reaching of the South Pole. That's important. But now it's there. And this is all based on the theoretical origin. So the theoretical origin by Claudius Ptolemy turns out to be correct. I'm not a geophysicist to tell you that these you need a counterbalance. It's not my thing. But he predicted 150 CE that we needed Antarctica. And Antarctica is absolutely huge, as Graham keeps Darren sees in the map, 1.5 the size of the US. And Canada has a consulate for Antarctica. Did you guys know that?
No.
Well, now you know. It's,
so it, I have a question before we go too much farther. So all those earlier maps that you showed that had about, like they had an actual Antarctica on its own, like, you know, you could see the boundary of the whole thing. Was that just, they just made up that boundary because no one had circumnavigated it yet?
Yes. No, they just completely. Well, it was off the first map, the Rosalini map. He comes up with it, and then following map, he copies it. And right. What's very important, and this is, by the way, we're gonna figure out exactly why Hancock knows or doesn't know, because there's a story behind that itself. So Antarctica is absolutely huge.
It's worth mentioning that all those dudes died, you know, that made it to the South Pole first. Then none of them made it back.
Yeah. Yes.
The British guys made it back because they took their time, but all the guys from the Viking team died.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. They went too hard to the paint getting there.
Really?
Well, how'd they lightning die? Strikes.
They just didn't have the energy or the fat or the, you know, it's fucking 400 years ago in the extreme cold. So they just, you know, they used up all their gusto getting there and none of them survived the way home.
No, it was only the late 1800s, I think, 1895 or something. So
moving forward 200 years about so, and lightning strikes, and this is the moment, Darren, sound effects. What comes after lightning? We got thunder. Love it. We got a show now. We're and lightning strikes in 1958 with Charles Hapgood, and Charles Hapgood proposes a crustal displacement theory, and he says, which is kind of everybody knew, the globe spins round and round. And he said that when the ice on the Antarctica and Arctic get too high, and as the world is spinning world around, they get thrown off or they get pushed off, and that moves the crust of the Earth, and it moves the continents as well. Crustal displacement theory, and so the crust is at the top, and you just kind of see how it slides off. But that's what he proposed. It goes round and round. And he wrote this in a book called Earth's Shifting Crust, 1958. Forward by Albert Einstein. So the big man writes it. He says, Einstein says, his idea is original, of great simplicity, and if it continues to prove itself, of great importance to everything that is related to the history of the Earth's surface. Okay. So Einstein's on board with this concept. And so instead of, we look at it today as plate tectonics, kind of a push me, pull me, right? You know, okay. But Hapgood proposed that it was the spinning of the Earth and the too heavy on either ends and it the kind of push off. And Hapgood takes this idea a step further in his book, Maps of the Ancient Sea Kings, 1966, okay, which Einstein does not for it. And in this, we can see the Pierre Riis map. He talks about the Antarctic map. He talks about Orontius Finius. He doesn't have the Canteleu map, okay, which predates them. Okay, and the civilization that vanished he has in there too. So now we're starting to hear the alternative narrative out there. And Hapgood was the first. Hapgood knew of Ptolemy's maps because this map was actually photographed out of his, copied out of his book. But I read his books. He did not read the first part of Ptolemy's geography that this was a theory. He had no idea, absolutely no idea that Antarctica was a theory to counterbalance the world. Completely unknown to Hapgood. And he also interpreted this theoretical ice-free connected to South America. Again, he doesn't know the theory, he doesn't know the history, and he hadn't seen the maps, the earlier maps. And of course, it's not connected, but he is actually looking at the Strait of Magellan. And we can see basically this, the narrative that Hapgood has of this prehistory of the world when everything's connected. Hapgood thought that South America at the end of the last ice age was connected to Antarctica, and through this crustal displacement theory, spun it off to where it is today. But in fact, the separation between Antarctica and South America is the space is the Strait of Gibraltar. As we've seen with the development of map from the Roselli map and the Phineas map, we can see how things changed over time and the span between a BlackBerry and an iPhone 8 or 9 or something like that. I bought my daughter one a few months ago. I think it was an 8 or 9. Okay. So we can see the evolution of these maps. And it's all based on Ptolemy. It's too hot or too cold in one way or the other. And we can also, people point out what I have in these red circles, say, well, this is the same thing, but they actually aren't the same thing. It's just in the wrong, you know, if you flipped in the mirror, maybe you could say it's the same thing, but it really isn't. It isn't really the same thing. And the actual South Pole is different from the Phineas South Pole and where Hapgood projected, or Hapgood said it was based on the Phineas map. And Hapgood was called out on this stuff. And he said, well, there was probably a lot of different, there's other map makers, he said, which he had no knowledge of. In fact, he missed a map, right? Is that they derive from, maybe they made a mistake. But the actual first, the discovery of Antarctica finally was by Amundsen in 1911. Okay. So Hapgood didn't consider the Contarini-Roselli map. He had no idea that it existed. And I'm not blaming him for this one, because it's now in the British Museum, and God knows how deep a stack it was in during his time. It also wasn't in color at the time of Hapgood. This Einstein is not correct about everything, and his concept that Hapgood's great idea, simplicity, that is related to the history of the Earth's surface, it just didn't work out. I don't think there's anybody out there that still follows this in the geology world, doesn't follow this concept. So where does Graham Hancock get his information? Now, we're not debunking Graham Hancock here. What we have done, we've gone back and showed that Hapgood didn't have all his ducks in a row. So Hancock definitely read Hapgood. In his Fingerprints of the Gods, Hapgood shows up 47 times. So I have a Kindle version. So I typed in Hapgood and it popped up 47 times. So Hancock is building on both of Hapgood's interesting books for the time. And Graham Hancock also cites Claudius Ptolemy. He cites it, I think it's hard for me to see there, maybe it's 7 or 8 times. But each place that Hancock cites Claudius Ptolemy is related to the Northern Hemisphere and glaciers. It's nothing to do with the theory of Antarctica. Hancock doesn't know that because Hapgood didn't know it, and therefore Hapgood didn't write it down. Okay. And so Fingerprints of the Gods, where does it stand on the Phineas map? Hancock cites it 18 times. So that's his source material. And that's the one we saw on Joe Rogan. Fair game. Okay. Does he cite the Contarini-Roselli map? I did it both names. 0, doesn't show up. So Hancock, at the time of Fingerprints of the God, and apparently at the time of the Joe Rogan interview a year or so ago, he didn't know about the Contarini-Roselli map. And it's fair because people, I'm pretty sure I'm the first one to go on a podcast to talk about this from this perspective. I'm pretty sure. And we saw that they are not the same, that we saw the evolution between the two. So what the bleep is Antarctica doing on a map during the 1500s, which we know was based on older source maps, true. When nobody knew it existed in the 1500s, true. Both these are true. To me, the obvious answer is the lost fingerprints of a lost civilization that mapped the world. And that comes from Hapgood. And Hapgood's not, he was not a stupid person. Hapgood was working with the information that he had. If Hapgood knew about the missing maps, missing to him, he couldn't have written either, well, the second book or even the first book with the hypothesis that he had. But this all goes back to bears. It's pretty simple. It's all about bears. You look to the north, you see Ursa Major. You look to the south, you don't see Ursa Major. But in the direction of the south is away from Antarctica, away from the Arctic. Therefore, it is Antarctica, a theory brought up by Claudius Ptolemy. He wrote about 1850. That is, this is the image from his book of the theory. We don't see land masses. We see a diagram. Pretty cool stuff. And if people want to go to my webpage or my sites and do whatever people do, it's all out there. I hope that people subscribe to Grimerica, especially the YouTube version, so they can see all the fun and exciting things that the team keeps bringing forwards to us. Graham's looking skeptical.
I'm going to pull up this thing because this is from.
No, I like it. I think it's great. I mean,
this is the Ethical Skeptic's latest article. I don't know if you follow any of his stuff, but he's really getting into this crustal displacement stuff as of late. Sure. And this, I'll check the date on the article in a second. It's pretty neat. But he just had this model made. This model is part of his new article, which it's just interesting on where it puts Antarctica. Sure. So this is where we are right now, state one. The inside would be the mantle, mm-hmm. and you can see it slip into mediated Dubenshkinov oscillation, mm-hmm. which now...
And what's his time zone on this? What's his time period?
Let's take a look in a second, but that would put Antarctica pretty close to the equator. Keeps, mm-hmm. you know, most of civilization doesn't really move that far off into the... It looks like, you know, North Africa might be fucked. But us, like Alberta, stays in almost in the same place, but in the south. So now, if we leave the full screen, let's see if we can find a date on this somewhere. So let's go up to the top. The name of the article is, and this is from the ethicalskeptic.com for May 12th. So this is actually about a year old. So exothermic core mantle decoupling, the Dvankhnikov oscillation hypothesis. The Y chromosome. So he's saying it looks like between 3000 and 5000 BC. Now, when in his theory, he gets into this whole thing that Egypt was covered in water here. You can see he thinks this line is from
karst erosion.
Karst erosion. Yeah, we had him on the show to talk about the karst erosion on the pyramid. I can't remember how much of this stuff we got into, but this article really goes in depth on why he thinks in the true polar wander event from 140 degrees to 31 degrees, which I just thought was interesting because it doesn't go into exactly what we're talking about. Well, it kind of does. You know, it does kind of get into exactly what we're talking about here.
Yeah, pull me up again. We're going to look at my – go back. Okay, so the Hapgood, which Hancock followed, said that Hapgood said at the end of the last ice age, South America was connected to Antarctica. Okay,
yeah,
and it's the exact same. It's the same Antarctica there. Okay, but what's the difference between the 1506 and the 1531? Is that in 1531 we had navigated further of South America through the Strait of Magellan, whereas in 1506 we had navigated that far, we didn't even consider that Antarctica could be separate. So you could, let's say hypothetically that the Earth crust plate was correct, hypothetically, these guys weren't thinking that. They were working off this Orontes Finneas map.
No, well, what about this? What about this? I mean, this is the area you're talking about, right? Between South America and Antarctica. I mean, look at this topography there. right? It looks like something was just smooshed, like went right through and broke that chain. Like this could have been over, you know, a few hundred miles and almost connected like that, you know?
Well, especially, I mean, you got to take two things into perspective is it seems like the water gets sloshing about a little bit when this thing happens. I mean, this thing could start leaning into younger dryas and all that. So it looks like there's some sloshing that could have moved that. But then the other thing to consider is what that looks like with 400 feet less water.
That's what I'm saying. So in 1800s, in the mid 1800s, before Hapgood probably had this information of, he probably had the topography underneath the water from soundings, because they had the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. They knew that this was looking like this in the 1800s from soundings. They knew that there was this, the Azores was sort of over all this. So they probably knew about this, right?
Well, I don't know if they, in which time?
In the mid-1800s. I mean, they did soundings.
Yeah, they might have.
Of all that Mid-Atlantic Ridge. So they were going with more than ancient maps. They had quite a mapping of the oceans by then. No? Bernie?
So Hapgood, he was, my read on Hapgood, he was missing maps. Okay. But I would agree with you that in lower oceans, there were more islands and there was more, but that's not what Hapgood was working off of. He was working off of incomplete information. I believe if he had more information, he definitely wouldn't wrote the Sea King's book. He probably still wrote the Earth was cross displacement book, but not the sea. He wouldn't have been pulling up the Piri Reis map, and because he would have, he put a lot of weight on the Piri Reis map being based on these ancient maps from before time. But we actually can see that it overlays with the Cantino planisphere, which was a few years earlier than the Piri Reis, and was stolen from the Italians, from the Portuguese by the Italians. He was missing maps. That's really what it came down to. So that I'm not a geologist. I'm not a world physicist. The way people in those spaces are, they're working with plate tectonics that, you know, the Himalayas were really high because they were pushed that way, you know, push me, pull me sort of thing. And where you all live, you live on some plains up there in Kamloops area. And you're on to one side of you is those mountains, the Banff Mountains,
Rockies, right?
The Rockies. Yeah. With the Banff is. Yeah. So you're in the pull, or the before the push, you're in the shade of the push that makes the Rocky Mountains. It's an interesting question. It's an interesting question that we've explored data that I've never seen put together in this place before. I wasn't interested. I had absolutely no interest in Hapgood and the Piri Reis map, any of this sort of stuff. I was watching a video by a admiral. And he's going through this history of maps, and he whenever he saw an article, he made a joke. He said, "Oh, there's Tommy's theory again." And I see this each map he shows, he makes this joke, but an article is different in every map that he does this. And so then I looked it up. I said, "Where?" And then I ordered Tommy's geography, and I said, "Oh my God. It's a theory. It's this admiral from Great Britain was correct in his narrative, but it wasn't a joke. It was an interesting theory, and sometimes interesting theories work out. I mean, I think that the Earth crust displacement was an interesting theory of its time that hasn't worked out, okay. But Antarctica, counterbalancing the southern hemisphere, the northern hemisphere, what actually works that way, was huge. That somebody, you know, at that time came up with this theory that it must be there. And until the time of the American Revolution, people are still looking for it. And before that time, they're putting on maps that they don't know it's there, but they assume that it's there. And then it connects here to this continent. It doesn't connect to that continent as time goes by, and they make these passageways. But yeah, it's over hundreds of thousands of years, is there some connection between Earth crust displacement and the movement of continents? Possibly, but you want to, probably not in the last 12.
There's a question in the chats about satellite pictures showing all of Antarctica. Is there any? Do you know of any satellite pictures showing all of Antarctica?
So I haven't studied satellite pictures of Antarctica. What's the question related to the satellite images of Antarctica?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess he's just asking if there are any.
So, what is someone looking for?
Yeah, I don't know. Have you seen this picture of Antarctica? This map?
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Check this out.
Yeah. We have a plan to go to Antarctica over the next 4 years.
Who's we?
We, Helen and I.
Oh, so cool.
We're working on this. And it will happen.
Like, here, can you go all the way? Can you check this out for me while you're there? Can you check out this big rectangular, like, farm looking thing in the middle of Antarctica and all these lines or striations going north and south?
Well, they're under.
You can go all the way over there and check that out for us.
You know what that looks like?
Right in the heart of Antarctica.
Yeah, it looks like someone printed it out and then they scanned it.
Yeah, it's maybe. Supposed to be from
it came out of a book or something.
No, it's from. Oh, hang on, I'm just trying. Oh, now is that me sharing or you?
That's me. I wanted to ask Bernie if he's looked into any of this yet.
That was like right in my. It was right above the thing I had on the screen. So no, that's from Bed Map 3 showing Antarctica without ice. So it's like a scanning technology that's showing it without ice. So very interesting. And somebody says that, I mean, the stuff on Antarctica is amazing. Like the ice sheet is supposedly massive, right? Like 12 million, over 12 million square kilometers. What is it? 4,897. So almost 5,000 meters thick. Crazy, eh? Go ahead, Darren.
It's kind of off topic, but have you had a chance to look at any of this stuff yet, Bernie? What do you think about this stuff? This is supposed to be under the pyramid.
Interesting stuff. So you've had a few guests on your program that talk about granite. And granite used for vases, granite used for sarcophagi, for structures. And I want Darren to Google, can granite be melted in a campfire? Let's Google that one. I'm going to start from that as a known. Can granite
melted? And I know it has a lower melting point than steel, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's lower than glass. It's lower than iron. And if you make a campfire out on the Grimerica Ranch.
No, granite cannot be burned or scorched with ordinary yeast. Granite is formed extreme heat and pressure, so it cannot be affected by cooking temperatures. A flame placed under the granite will have no melting or scorching effect.
Okay, so can granite be melted?
It will shatter at 573 degrees centigrade.
Yeah, Rob says he works with granite and it explodes.
That's not granite. Doesn't explode. So I'm looking at granite. So high 1600 to 1650 degrees Celsius. Okay. So there's melted and there's softened. Actually, let's do this again, because I've actually had granite in a campfire can be softened, and it softened. So it changed the shape of the granite. It also depends what is in your campfire. So can it be softened in a campfire? It is less likely to explode than permeable rock like limestone or sandstone. So let's say somebody can build a campfire. I don't mean like a Boy Scout campfire, right? With mom standing around, you know, don't get too close, all that sort of stuff. But a good, college or high school reunion campfire, you throw in the desks, right? You got a good flame, you got some solid, some heat. One can soften granite. One can soften it. Okay. And if you can soften it, you can press it into a mold. Pretty simple stuff. Without any polymers, you don't need any polymers. Okay. You can press it into a mold. You can press it into a mold or sarcophagi. You can press it into a mold to make some sort of structures. And if you want it to be a shiny surface, you would you would glaze the inside, some sort of glazing. Okay, then you heat the glazing, and if you want to have a rough finish, you wouldn't heat the glazing, and you just get the shape of whatever your mold is. It's basic injection molding concepts. And if you want to make a vase out of this stuff, what you do is you would create a mold, and you would create a mold based on a prototype from let's say beeswax. I have a friend that does this in his garage. He makes forms out of beeswax and then makes this very simple mold, and then he pours metal into it to make pins, brooches, and things like that. Very simple stuff to do. And so how you'd make one of these little vases, because they're little, right? They're like this size, is you'd create a mold, and you'd soften the granite in fire. You'd press it down into it. And then you would have you'd have your vase. And why I believe they use granite, because it's a relatively low temperature to iron and other things that ancient Egyptians had. Okay. And they also have those handles with the pinholes. So what they would have done is they would have had pins in there when they pressed the granite into it. And so then they pull the pins out, and then you've got those pinholes. Now, the reason why you'd want to soften it to press it in versus melt it is that if you soften it, you can roughly keep the same granite-like look as you had when you took it out of the ground. Whereas if you melt it, it's going to be a mess. It's going to be an absolute mess. I believe that they were softening the granite, pressing it into the molds, not just the vases, but these sarcophagi, these large monuments, and also down in Machu Picchu. In Machu Picchu, you see all these, Cusco, you have these walls that are, they all fit together, all these stones fit together, but they're not machined, they're not any cut or anything like that, but they created molds in the ground, and they press the granite, and heated the granite, soften it, they press into the molds, create those shapes. And then after they had a whole array of them, they then put them up on the wall, because that's how it creates a wall. You don't kind of build up. You lay down the ground, then you lift up the pieces one by one. And so I don't think there's any high technology in any of this stuff, but rather people found the right type of granite through trial and error, through their own campfires. They found it softened at the bottom of the campfire, a good old campfire. And then they said, well, you know, let's put these two together, see how it works. And if you look at these walls, like for example, Cusco, there's often these knobs. Okay. I believe that the knobs are are sort of the residue or the material that has dropped down, that has sunk down. Yeah. Has sunk down. But it's an artistic effect.
But there's still the weight and the size of these. I mean, now you got a fire, like now you got to, melt it or soften a 20 ton block or whatever these things are. I mean, that's a whole logistical challenge on its own. I mean, Rob says he works with granite. He's saying, I use torches on the surface to explode the surface layer off. It's called flaming. You polish with diamond or carborundum. But I don't think he thinks you're right about the whole softening thing. So I think he's not in agreement with you on that part. So, I mean, it is interesting because, we've seen the granite being smoothed off in certain things in Egypt. They just smooth it right off. It's like they just washed it off almost with something, like, and you're thinking maybe they softened it with heat or something. I don't know.
I think that's the bottom of the mold. I think it's flat and shiny because that's the bottom of the mold.
No, these are like in situ. They're softened.
Oh, in situ. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like half the wall is not soft. Like half the wall is not flat. Interesting theory.
I think it's a worldwide phenomenon, not because there was a connection between these people, but people accidentally learned that they could soften it.
Yeah.
They were clearly up to something crazy. I mean, that we're not quite up to yet. We got buddies over in Egypt looking at it right now, and they're going down to South America later this year. So,
but Bernie, did you see that latest thing about the scan and the underneath the plateau? the Giza Plateau. It's pretty interesting. It's coming out. I don't know if it's, you know, how accurate it's going to be, or somebody in the chat mentioned, the technology will be banned and info will stop this pyramid scan. I mean, no, because I mean, they're talking, this is very strange. They're talking about those huge pillars, the pictures that Darren showed going down like miles into the earth. And then they sit on two square blocks and the whole plateau, the Giza Plateau is on top of that. It's almost like that meme that you see of like the big obelisk from the bottom of the earth and the pyramids on top of it. It's almost like that. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. I think that the Giza pyramids are fascinating. I mean, like how people cut, moved, lifted, set, all those stones in the life of one, two, or even three, for any one period in the life of one, two, or three pharaohs. I think it's fast. I just can't imagine. If I could think of like top three things in the world to watch somebody do live, would be to see somebody, how they lift them up, because it's just not a lot of people. So they had some trick, they had some craftsmanship. You know, you guys have been around, you know, building, right? And you know that it's not easy. You have to know how to set the foundation. You have to know how to angle it correctly on uneven base surfaces with rock. It's just like you have to know how to, when you build a wall with stones, you lay down the ground first. I had an uncle, Uncle Bobby. And he was an architectural stone person. He did a lot of mafia work. In fact, in high school, I helped him a few days. We went to a mafia job. It was a Gambino.
Type of stone you wrap to your ankle when you get chucked into the river?
Or? Well, they use marble. They use, because the mafia types love marble, and he had a lot of repeat business. And they also worked in cash. And I saw him do this. And yes, he did use a diamond chip saw to cut off some of the edges, but most of them he actually just hit. He just hit, it was faster. And he laid these walls right out on the ground. And then my job was to lift, he'd say, point it, lift it, and put it in place. And so the craftsmanship is not to look at a wall and see and just start putting them up there, but rather to see the vision in the rocks and in these stones, and in this case was marble, to see how they might fit together. He'd just look around and he said, this one over there, and when he's laying them out in the ground. So most of them he did even cut. And then he set them in place. Now, he did use mortar, that is for sure. But he didn't need mortar for a lot of this stuff. Because once you start with a little mortar, you have to finish with mortar. And we had an empty cement bag at the end. I said, starts throw it in the truck. He says, no, leave it. They can use it.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, interesting to see that, right? And how somebody gets sort of that intuitive, you know, stacking of the stones and stuff. I just wonder if maybe they built it in place, like you said, and they put these softened stones so that they fit together, like, you know, perfectly, because they're able to kind of squish them in place, you know?
I think they softened them on the ground. I think they created the shape on the ground the same way my uncle, you know, took his chisel and cut off the edges. Yeah. I think they probably didn't have to soften. They didn't have to do anything to them. But they put the pieces together on the ground, and then they stack them up, because that's how it's done.
We had a buddy that was making some, but he ended up blocking me on Twitter. So.
Oh, did he? Really?
Yeah, he's a crazy leftist. It was Fotelli, right? I think it was about global warming. I got in an argument about global warming and he blocked me. So anyway, Bernie, this has been great. As always, where can people find your stuff? Where can they track you down? Where can they follow you on social media?
BeforeRyan.com, my webpage, all the links. I use Before Ryan for just about everything. I am in the book.
Perfect.
And thank you again, guys.
Awesome. That was fun, man, to look at all those maps and to kind of, yeah, go over it like that with the big question, you know, where did it come from? I like it.
Perfect. Thanks a bunch, Bernie. Come back anytime. Let us know next time you got something. Ciao for now. And that was a chat with Bernie Taylor back in Grimerica for a third time.
I think it might have been four. I don't know. Was it fourth? Did we do like a Rockfin video with him a long time ago?
Oh, you know what? I think we did do a Rockfin thing too. Yeah. So it might actually be four.
Yeah.
Might be four. Like, could be always fun. It's always a great time going through those maps. Like, I haven't seen a bunch of that stuff. So hopefully people find that fantastic. Of course, big thanks to Bernie for coming on the show. Big thanks to you guys for listening. And an even bigger thanks if you choose to support us here at, we put out the show. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of effort. We put it all out there for free in hopes that if you guys are getting some value from the show, you head over to grimerica.ca/support today and sign up for a monthly or make a one-time donation to keep us in business, keep us going. We're going to be coming out with some extra shows this month and hoping to get some extra support in turn. Of course, while you're there, head over to grimerica.outlawed.ca for other podcasts, a little more controversial and conspiratorial. And there's also a lot more like current news and stuff like that. We're doing roundups and stuff. Contact at the cabin for trips and events. Contact at thecabin.com. We got Azores looking for Atlantis this year. And we got the Bonneville flood path with Randall Carlson coming up in just like a month and a half. We have the A-List-CA if you're into Canadian content, into it's kind of no agenda style Canadian politics and news. And then we have adultbrain.ca for books, audiobooks, ebooks, and publishing books. If you want to publish your books, we just had a few more come out on the website today, and a bunch of them are coming through on Audible and Spotify. For that, if you're in like Audible or Spotify, you can just search Adult Brain Publishing and they'll all come up for you. So check all that stuff out. GrimericaCBD.com for CBDs and tinctures and gummies. Other than that, we love you guys. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
Out of the stuff dreams are made and popsicle sticks. Please look at my rocket ship schematics. Tell me it can fly to the moon. Tell me I'm not a lunatic. I bet, I bet, I bet. I bet you think I'm a space cadet. No regret, I do not fret, 'cause I am a space cadet. In my hands I have a gas can and matchsticks. Yes, Earth is my home, but I need a vacation. All the sadness, the chaos, and traumatics. I'll let you do the countdown. 3, 2, 1, no hesitation. I bet you think I'm a space cadet. I bet.